Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation today with 96-year-old Forrest Hilton of San Jose, California, originally from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, and a Navy veteran who participated in 14 landings in World War II. His ship was the USS Haywood, an attack transport that had landed troops at Guadalcanal before Forrest came aboard. He would take part in the Haywood's six other battle stars in the war, including the Aleutian Islands, where he first saw action in May of 1943 in the landings at Attu, and after returning casualties to San Francisco, the Haywood headed north again.
Now, later on, we invaded Kiska, north of Attu. We had taken an artillery piece, I think a 105, and a tank lighter, LCM. They had a weapons carrier towing it. They wouldn't let us land it because they had to go up a hill like that, and it was frozen. They couldn't get traction to tow that gun up that hill until, so they had to get a couple winch cats. Well, the winch cat could climb that frozen place and get up there and run a cable down, and then they could take them. So we laid around there for quite a little while, maybe several hours. Finally, they brought in two D4 Caterpillar winch cats. So we unloaded, and my job was to go down and keep an eye on those engines, but I was afraid that the Japanese might bring a mortar outfit up there and shoot a few mortar rounds down at us. So we had a 50 caliber machine gun permanently mounted on this LCM. So I manned that thing. I was watching that ridge to put a stop to those guys with any mortars coming, sending down to us. So when we backed out, the coxswain backed her out and he started going, and he called on me and he told me, "Hey, Hilton, the engines are getting hot." And I had learned enough about it how to change the sand traps. They had traps down there with the screens to catch sand, keep it from going being pumped up through the heat exchangers. It changed, the salt water would go through this thing like a radiator in a car, only use water instead of air. So you didn't want sand getting in that little brass radiators. But you could clean those strainers, but you shut off one and it would open up the water through the other strainer while you clean this one. Well, I went down in the engine room and I pulled the thing, and he told me, "Hey, there's another one too, the other engine." Okay, I opened them up wide open. We got it just a little ways, and he opened the throttles wide open because there was a fog bank coming in. We'd get out there in that fog, we'd get lost. We couldn't find our ship. So all of a sudden, bang, 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 first engine went, blew that engine up. Then just before he could even slow the other one down, it blew up. That cold water from the fresh strainer, and here we was dead in the water. We didn't have any power. And it was getting kind of late, and the fog, here come this fog boiling over us. And we got a tarp and laid it out to try to get a little bit of cover over us, keep some of that fog from soaking us wet, you know. Had we set a lookout, and we'd go to lay down, and we'd try to get a little sleep. And this lookout, he was a radio operator, but his radio wouldn't work. The walkie-talkie wasn't any good. And he woke up, "Hey, guys, get up. Something out there." So, boy, we jump up. We get that machine gun all set. Then we heard somebody, "Who goes there?" In English. So, oh, boy, we was happy to hear that. And here they come, one of those old four Piper destroyers, World War I destroyers with a radar. They picked us up on radar because we had put, or CNR had made a detector. They bolted with a pipe and some hardware cloth, made a square like that, about 4 feet on each side. That was for a ship with a radar could pick it up. And if they could get in contact with us, they could guide us back to the ship. But in this case, we didn't have any power. Both engines was torn up. So they took us in tow and towed us back to the Haywood and cast us off real close to the ship. And another one of our boats took us in tow to get it up to the side of the ship where we could tie up. But that was, we could have drifted out there. We were just thinking, but we let our anchor line out, no bottom. That anchor just straight down. And no bottom, the anchor couldn't reach the bottom. We did put out a sea anchor with a couple galvanized buckets and tied them and dropped them over them with a couple galvanized buckets and tied them and dropped them over them and tied them up to the mooring bits on the stern. But that was, we didn't know what we was going to do. Maybe we would have washed ashore at Russia, because Russia was right up there off of that. Or maybe somebody would have found us, but they didn't know anything, because this guy's radio wouldn't. He couldn't get contact with the ship. Holts Bay was on the north side of that too. We landed on Massaquoi Bay. During the night, I think that group of guys was cooks. They went to sleep in their sleeping bags, and I guess instead of having a guard watching, and I guess they all went to sleep, and the Japanese come down through there and bayoneted these guys in the in their sleeping bags. Now, I know the Haywood cooked a whole lot of beans. I don't know where they got them, but they had some big 5-gallon thermos containers that they could make and put hot beans in and hot food. The old Cane, the ship that Humphrey Bogart made the movie on. Well, that ship was there, and she took that food over to the soldiers over in the Holts Bay area, across around on the other side of where we were in Massacre Bay. Another thing that happened with us there in Massacre Bay to the ship, there was destroyers that was patrolling all back and forth, because the Japanese had a lot of submarines. These destroyers picked up a submarine in the transport area. Well, we had the Haywood, the J. Franklin Bell, the Harris, and the Leonard Wood. So these destroyers zeroed in on the sub, and they started dropping depth charges. They dropped them pretty close to the Haywood, and they loosened some rivets on there. Down below, we had water spraying through little holes for the loose rivets, because that ship was an old ship, a World War I ship, or back in those days. And it wasn't a welded joints. It was all riveted. But we had real good bilge pumps, and they could pump that water out faster than it come in, because it was just a little spray. We took those soldiers with the frozen feet, brought them aboard, and they amputated a lot of them on the way back to the States. Some of the guys died from gangrene, but penicillin was pretty prominent at that time, and it saved a lot of people's lives. But a lot of guys lost their feet from frostbite.
Well, and you're taking this in, and you're still a young kid. I mean, you're 20, 21 years old. Did you start to become concerned that something like that or something worse could happen to you?
Oh, yeah. We all knew that at any time we might get it. You know, the ships were being sunk almost one a day or so, or maybe more. The Japanese had a strong fighting force. Their navy was strong. They had us outnumbered on ships and airplanes and big battleships. They had tremendously large battleships. But the U.S. just take over. We just knew we wasn't going to lose that war. You never knew when you wasn't going to see the sun come up the next day. You know. One time we had a ship. We was in convoy with troops. We had a ship cross right across our bow. I was on a mid-watch, a 12 to 4 watch, in the engine room. And so all of a sudden, about 2 o'clock in the morning or so, the annunciator started going wild from the bridge, sending down a message to stop, full astern. And the whistle began to blow, and even another collision siren that I'd never heard before. It started blasting away, so the throttleman, right away, he shuts off his forward throttle and opens up the stern throttle to back down. But you don't stop one of those big ships like that very quick, you know. And you can change your direction of your propeller, but the ship will still keep traveling, you know, for a little while before it'll stop and start backing down. And that annunciator was going crazy. And that poor guy that take down the bells, you had a man they call a messenger. He was in contact with the bridge by phone, but he had to write down everything, those bells, because every time that they changed the setting on that annunciator, engine room telegraph, some of them called them, he had to write it down right, and the time, and write down what they wanted, what they was asking for. And he couldn't keep up. And he even had me come over and answer the thing, because you had to answer it. They would ring, and then you had to answer them by doing the same thing with your enunciator. And I had learned how to do that. This guys would taught me a lot about the operating of the engine room. So anyway, finally the ship crossed our bow, and some of the guys on the gun crews on the bow, forward gun deck, said they could almost have jumped across from one ship to the other. It was that close for us crashing into the other ship. And all that time, we was backing down. So we're lucky that we could back down and let that ship get across in front of us without crashing. And then we get the change to go forward. So Peterson, who was the throttleman, tried to shut off the stern throttle, and he couldn't shut it off. It was locked. He had spun it and had gone up and locked. It went too far. He couldn't break it loose. So he yelled for me to come help him, and I ran to help him, and the two of us couldn't break it loose. But there was a big monkey wrench that was in a little rack on the throttle platform. So I run and got the monkey wrench, and we put it on, and both of us jerking, we finally broke it loose and got it stopped. Well, we finally got the ship things going, and the bridge called. This guy, Teagarden, was a messenger, so he hollered over to Peterson. Hey, that's the old man. He sounds like he's pretty mad. He said for you to come to the bridge immediately. Well, Peterson couldn't leave that engine room until he was properly relieved. Well, I couldn't relieve him because I wasn't a qualified throttleman. He did have a relief, but we had to go get him. And somebody had to go from the engine room, either me or the other oiler from down below on the next deck down. So Peterson told me, go up to the bridge, Hilton, and tell the captain I'll be there as soon as I get relieved. Okay, I'll go up there, you know. And this old man saw me. This guy must have been 75 years old, this skipper, this captain. And he let in on me. He thought I was a throttleman. And I tried to tell him that I'm not the throttleman, sir. And he didn't listen. Threw his hat down on the deck and jumped up and down on it. It blew up completely. His name was Fitzgerald. Finally, the executive officer told him, calm down or I'll have you removed from the bridge. And he calmed down. But anyway, I went down and got the other guy in him. And then Peterson had the face. But he didn't get it like I did because the captain had already been told they'd taken off the bridge. But anyway, we never did hear what caused that ship to cross in front of us, right across our bow. And we'd lucky we didn't back into some other ships that was behind us, because we was out of control, too, after that throttle locked up.
Well, that's the question I have. If you and Peterson had not been able, with that monkey wrench, to jar it loose, what would have happened to you guys?
Pretty good chance we'd have crashed into some other ship, or maybe they could have dodged us, or... Well, the only thing we could have done is just shut off the bulkhead stops from the boiler room, shut the steam off from the boilers over to the end of the engine room. They had bulkhead stops, big valves that you could shut off. You just shut off the steam, and the engine would stop. They wouldn't have steam. They wouldn't turn. Yeah, that really scared me more than anything else, I think.
Which is really saying something, because we still haven't heard why he ended up ashore on the island of Betio in the Battle of Tarawa, or how he helped foil a Japanese torpedo plane that was trying to finish off the cruiser USS Honolulu in Leyte Gulf. We'll hear those stories from 96-year-old Forrest Hilton when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.